Episode 155 of the TV Dudes, recorded October 26, 2017. The TV Dicks. So guys, let's talk about dicks.
I don't know if I meant to sign up for this episode on the schedule.
This is that show, right? We're just going to talk about dicks the whole time.
Don't say any puns.
No puns. Is this the Patreon? Are we doing the real episode?
We are talking about dicks. Private dicks.
Oh, so like Jessica Jones.
So not like when you put everybody on blast with that text.
That was a mistake. That was actually only supposed to go to people I know very, very well.
Sounds like something a senator would say.
That's what happens when you cut a hole in your pocket. The camera just...
So we're talking about private dicks, detectives, noir, gumshoes.
All right.
Seamuses. And so this week we're talking about Netflix's Mindhunter, Hulu's Chance, and Amazon's Comrade Detective, in part thanks to a request by Moore Ben Reuven.
Thank you so much for that. I'm so happy we're talking about Comrade Detective.
And I'm happy somebody made me watch that. It is very, well, stay tuned.
And if I got your name wrong, I'm sorry, because Grant's not here and he got it right. So before we get into all that, I'm Randy.
I'm Les.
And I'm Kyle.
Grant is not here right now, so it's the inmates running the asylum.
Yes. Yeah.
So there will be a lot more dicks. Maybe. I don't know.
One fewer.
That's actually true.
I'm sitting here like, don't do any dick puns. Don't do any dick puns.
So, as always, if you want to support us, you guys can go to patreon.com/TV Dudes, throw us a dollar an episode. That'll come out to like $4 a month. It's, you know, cheaper than, I don't know, what's cheaper than beer, coffee?
Oh my gosh, $4 a month. You can do so much.
It's cheaper than a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Man, that's like nothing.
That's the difference. You're not paying to eliminate the commercials off Hulu.
It's true, yeah.
You just throw it to us
and
put up with the commercials.
Watch some commercials and listen to the TV
Dudes.
It's
really just one commercial they run multiple times.
It's actually true.
You know, some podcasts, they're charging you like $10,
it's
$8.
It's true.
You know, I feel like we are adequately priced at the $6 range.
We always appreciate our patrons. We love you all. Thank you for that. And as a result of being a patron, you guys get bonus exclusive content. I think this week we're going to talk about our Halloween party and our Halloween experiences and our fall drunk stories, maybe.
Also, another Patreon exclusive, I guess, first time events.
Yes.
Which kind of had to already be a Patreon before now, but in the future, who knows? Maybe that'll be like a Patreon benefit.
It's possible.
Yeah.
And we also are part of the Permanent Record Network.
Permanent Record.
That's weird not to be a part of that. So we always like to give a shout out to our TV theme podcast and our brethren and sistren in podcasting land. And this month we're talking about Mr. Robot O. That's O-H. And you can find that at permanentrecord.com/podcast/Mr. Robot O.
permanentrecord.com/podcast/Mr. Robot O.
You guys make me so happy. Mike Moody and cohorts will discuss each episode of Mr. Robot in depth, and those guys know what they're talking about.
Doesn't he have an actual hacker on that show?
He does.
Ghost.
Whoa. Is that the guy's real name?
I think it's his Christian name.
Yeah, he was born Ghost. Ghost.
No, his
F
hacker
Ghost.
Name is actually Philip.
Yeah, it's weird. It's a little weird.
Nice.
So, give that one a listen and check out all the shows on Permanent Record. Grant's not here, but he does an awesome Star Trek show with Mike Moody and a couple other folks we know, and y'all should listen to that one,
yes,
too.
Yes, that's a great follow-up to the new Trek show.
That is Star Trek Discovery Pod. That's a bonus Permanent Record promo this week, by the way.
Uh-huh.
So they should pay us extra.
Yeah, seriously.
That's why we make the big money from...
Do we get paid?
Do you have to pay CBS exclusive to listen to the pod? Because I think we should get paid if that's the case.
You only have to pay if you want to watch Star Trek. You can just listen to the pod and try to piece together what Star Trek's about.
Ah, that seems like an interesting concept for a podcast.
It's a game.
Yes. I think that's how the Orville gets done.
All right. So listener questions, if you like us on Facebook, you can go. And once a week, we post a Taking Questions post. And we will, if you post a question, we'll probably answer it.
All right.
Well, at least read it on the air. So, Justin Zarian wants to know, content censorship for violence, language, and sex continues to shrink across the board, and more channels are launching as open forums like HBO. While this has led to a quality programming evolution, I feel there is some merit to delivering quality programming while working within the restrictions. For example, it could be argued that the masturbation episode of Seinfeld worked so well because being unable to say masturbation forced the writers to come up with cleverer ways to deliver the punchlines. This isn't always true, but it seems easier for writers to get away with subpar shows when they aren't being given challenges. What are your thoughts on this, and what do you feel is the best approach to working in an open forum without getting lazy in content use?
I would agree that it is very easy, and we saw it when shows first expanded into, you know, past basic cable and into like HBO type shows.
Yeah.
Shows where people just said fuck for no, like just out of the blue, like suddenly this character swears or like a character swears and I'll look at the corner of the screen to like, oh, we're on one of those channels. All right. Yeah. And cause it has nothing to do with the plot. It feels like junior high swearing. Like, look how adult we are. I said a swear.
Right.
And that happens. I feel like really, really easily if you take away all limits and restrictions, because I think Justin's right. A lot of times shows are better for what they have to work around. Like that Seinfeld bit, like, is mm-hmm. better for them not being able to say masturbation in that episode.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, I remember the distinct point when we switched from like the 90s types of sex scenes where it was so obviously fake because the angle they chose to shoot it,
yeah,
which was always a guy behind a girl like really going at it and like her moaning really loud. And then somewhere, let's just call it halfway through Sex in the City, using every opportunity I can to bring in Sex in the City to every show.
We do call you Kyle Sex in the City Scott.
Hey, I've been called.
That's worse. Awkward.
Nope. But no, yeah, I feel like at the beginning of that show, they were doing like the man behind thrusting to like now what you see on like Girls or Love, where the camera's up much closer. It's kind of like the Hitchcock way of doing a sex scene. Like, you don't have to show them everything to make it feel way more intimate and more kind of risque.
We don't necessarily have to go into it, but Mindhunter, I think in the first or second episode, has one of the more like, wow, that's an actual realistic angle. You guys could be having sex.
That was a good angle. I was impressed with that angle.
That seems like an odd
angle.
Thing to say, but it's one of those like, okay, you're not somehow pretending like human anatomy has something coming out of their sternum or like there's no way those are two adults. Like you're the worst, I feel like, sitcom-wise. It's really weird for that. And some of that is more risque tolerance as a culture, and then some of it is flat-out differences in broadcast standards on what channel they're on.
Oh, sure. Do you guys remember what a big deal it was when NYPD Blue showed a butt?
Yeah.
At 9 p.m. on what, ABC or NBC, whatever that network was? I mean, that was crazy.
Was that Dennis Franz's butt?
I believe it was Dennis Franz's butt.
I think Portlandia has handled this best in the Ta-Da episode where Frank and Carrie just push their beds together. They put a sheet over their crotch area and then it's like, Urka, Urka, Urka. And he goes, Ta-Da. And she goes, wait, why'd you pull it out? You're supposed to be inseminating me. And he goes, oh, that's just how I've always done it. I didn't know there was another way. And then the whole episode, he keeps going Ta-Da and pulling it out at the last minute. But obviously you never see anything.
I will say, I think that, I do think that Justin has a really good point about content restriction. I think that there is something to be said. I've said this about comics where great creators sometimes need an editor. You need someone who can tell you no.
Yeah.
Even if most of your – if 99% of your ideas are great, you still want someone who can shoot down that 1% idea. Like Aaron Sorkin needs someone to tell him no, and most people are not telling him no anymore.
Yeah. There's always looking for that line between – whether you're just saying this to be provocative or because you can say provocative things or you want to just push an envelope on and push people's buttons.
Right.
Or whether content restriction is preventing you from telling a story.
Right.
If content restriction is preventing you from telling a story about an uncomfortable topic, then yes, you should push that envelope. But if it's just to make an 8 p.m. audience titter so that they watch your show again next week, that's a cheap shot. That's a horror movie full of jump scares, and I'm not as interested.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. Mike Moody, hey, we know that guy.
Uh-huh.
He says,
this guy.
Which one of you guys going to be Negan for Halloween? It's funny because I already have my costume, and I'm not going to be Negan. But I do have a Halloween tradition where I beat someone to death with a barbed wire, shrouded bat every Halloween.
We will have a bat shrouded in barbed wire at the Halloween event.
Good, because I don't do Halloween unless I'm going to beat somebody to death.
Well, I was just looking for like cool stuff to decorate the place with. I got machetes, axes.
Oh, I was going to do it, but without the leather jacket, and then just yell at people all night that I'm the chick from High Tension. Like, no!
Morben Reuven says, "Hello, comrades." I don't know if she said it with that accent, but you can't read that line without that accent. Thanks for covering Comrade Detective. With the current political climate, I feel like there's a resurgence of propaganda, be it a certain red hat Fox News or the president straight up saying the news agency he doesn't like need to be shut down. Even though Comrade Detective is a comedy, it helped me really re-examine some of the subtle and grand propaganda in America. As such, here's my one serious question and one fun question. Was there a show that started out being silly but actually changed your perspective on something in real life? And the silly question is, the TV dudes are tasked with making a propaganda for a political candidate. What would your show be about? Who would star, etc.? Also, if you want to make it extra hard, the propaganda will have to make Ted Cruz look like a good candidate. No.
Oh. Here's the thing. Oh, I'm jumping into this one head first.
Go.
If I had to, I would embrace it, okay? I would make a full-out Michael Bay, over the top, like tons of like beautiful women, tons of like bro jocks with guns and camo and stuff. It'd be like a Navy SEAL movie set in Kentucky. Oh, it'd be
cruise missile.
Yeah. Or actually, I guess it'd have to be set in Texas. But I mean, like,
or
a
Canada,
very
or
Kentucky
Cuba.
Looking Texas. Like,
no, Canada, Texas, and Cuba.
Oh, my God.
It jumps all three. Yep.
The supervillain actually lives in Kentucky.
You could probably get cross continental financing for this and like also release it on Sky.
Get those in front of those. Wait, Sky the network, not like on airlines.
Oh, probably both.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, it'd be on every airline.
Man, because you trap a bunch of people in an airplane and make them watch Ted Cruz.
I mean, you saw what people did to watch Star Trek on CBS. I mean, these people, they'll be buying airline tickets just to catch this show.
No, that's how The Purge gets started.
I mean, I could see doing it. It would be a very propaganda film. Like, Ted Cruz would have to be it would be similar to Dexter, where Cruz is some kind of serial killer that targets other serial killers. Maybe having something to do, like, I think his MO would be like Zodiac based.
It'd be like American Dad, but not ironic at all.
See, I'd go the other way. I think I'd make it a comedy, and it would be a wacky Uncle Ted and all the crazy things he's saying. But you would like play down the creep factor. So instead, it's like this harmless, clueless dude who keeps putting his foot in his mouth, and he's just everyone's like, "All that Ted."
Yep, shit my Ted says.
Shit my Ted says. That is it. That's it. The serious side of the question, though, is there a show that started out being silly but actually changed your perspective on something?
You know that one that we watched recently, American Vandal. Yeah. When I started that, I was like, "This isn't going to have anything to say. This is just total silliness." Do you know what we're talking about?
I know what you're talking about. I haven't finished.
It's the dick drawn show.
Yep. TV dicks.
But yeah, no. When we got to the end of it, I was like, this is actually kind of spurred up an interesting conversation for me.
Right.
And like how I use social media. And I don't know. It's there's been a lot of content like that that's kind of got me thinking about that type of thing.
As far as one that I didn't intend to go into silly that changed, I can't really think of anything that did. I mean, the ones that really have messed with me lately, I knew were going to, like Handmaid's Tale.
Right.
I stopped watching Homeland after the first season. I started to pick it up in season two, and it's the first time that I've ever, it comes up because of the propaganda comment. It's the first time that I've ever watched a show and thought, I hope my parents aren't watching this, not because it's not good television or not because it's not entertaining or everybody's not doing a great job, but because you come away with an inflated sense of paranoia and concern about things that are not happening that you are. I do not believe we are separating that overall feeling from our other decisions.
Yeah.
And you
I feel like the popularity of that show is both a response to and a cause. I feel like that's conflated. Like it both helps gin up more animosity and paranoia. I felt more paranoid as like a hardcore liberal watching Homeland. Well, and I was like, man, my parents are flipping from this to Fox News. Like the other 23 hours of their day are Fox and then this. And that's and they're not alone in this. Like there's a whole swath of the country that I feel like is watching like stuff like Homeland, and then and I felt propagandish about it. Like this feels jingoistic. Like we're teaching ourselves to cheer for this. Comrade Detective actually makes several creepy points about stuff like Monopoly.
Yeah.
The board game they find.
Yeah. And to go to what you were saying, because it's the same creative team, 24 was like that for me. I love 24 and I actually really enjoyed watching it. But the way I watched season one and two and the way I watched the last few seasons are very different, because I watched it early on and I was like, oh, just another dumb action movie. I grew up in 80s action movies. And it wasn't until relatively recently, later than it should have been, that I sort of woke up with the notion of just how much rah-rah America propaganda action movies had put into my head since I was a kid.
I feel like it's one of the creepiest things I've ever watched. It's one of the only things I've ever seen people get really irritated watching in a class. Was Triumph of the Will, the Leni Riefenstahl, the propaganda movie.
Yeah, the Nazi propaganda.
Yeah, when they built Nuremberg Stadium, like they built in niches for like little niches for the cameras and stuff. Hitler's cars were constructed to hold the cameras to do reversal shots.
Oh, I've seen those. Those are cool camera rigs.
And it's from a technical movie making standpoint, the thing's amazing. I see why Criterion Collection put it out. But the other reason it needs to remain out there is to understand how effective editing and narration choice or narrative choice can be. That if a filmmaker's good, you forget they're there. And you forget that they are picking and choosing what you see. There's a moment in Triumph of the Will where Hitler looks up out of his car and he sees a cat on a windowsill and he kind of like waves at it and the cat runs inside. And it's a cute moment. Like it's a humanizing moment that is constructed from multiple days of filming.
Mm-hmm.
And they shot the cat and they shot Hitler. And then a month later, they edit it together. Yeah. And it looks incredible. So that you're watching this going, I would come away from an hour and a half of this thinking that he is a good person.
Yeah.
And if it's well enough done, then you can miss the hand behind it.
Yeah. It's somewhat chilling because we all like to think we're somewhat that we're smart. Savvy. We're smart people. Yeah. We're going to see through it, but we're all vulnerable to it. No matter how smart you are. And in some cases, the smarter you are, the easier it is to get you to go on along with something.
There's a reason there's like a whole list of logical fallacies that don't go away.
Yeah.
We just keep doing them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little terrifying. All right. Jonathan Habschmichael says, hi, dudes. I marathoned through all 28 episodes of The Simpsons Treehouse of Horror Halloween specials, and it felt like a visit to old relatives in a retirement home. The classic era episodes and a few beyond still hold up despite being at least 18 years old, while the more recent episodes really were hard to watch as beloved series being a shell of its former self. What were your favorite Simpsons Treehouse of Horror segments or favorite Halloween specials if you were never a Simpsons fan?
Have you guys seen the Treehouse of Horrors for this year?
No. I haven't watched in a few years.
Oh, it is good.
Yeah,
this year.
I'm a few years behind on Simpsons Treehouse of Horrors, but overall, I love them. They've just been classics the whole time.
One of my favorites that I absolutely love is the Soylent Green episode. The Soylent Green one. That one's a favorite. I'm sure.
If you like that, you'll like this new one.
Okay, nice. I also have a weird fondness for the signs coming to life. If only for the Paul Anka song.
Yeah, that's a good one. Mm-hmm. Was it a Treehouse of Horror where Homer goes fully 3D, like into the real world?
That was the Treehouse of Horror. Yes,
they do the behind, like the Twilight Zone behind the bookcase hole in the wall.
Wow, this looks really expensive.
Not a great overall show, though. It has a warm spot in my heart. Two Guys, a Girl, and a Pizza Place, which later became Two Guys, a Girl, with young Ryan Reynolds.
Yep.
Also had a young Nathan Fillion.
Yeah,
As the girl, the titular girl, her boyfriend, and later like live in. I think he was their building super.
Yeah,
is Nathan Fillion.
Yep.
And their Halloween episodes, I think he's on two or three of them of the four or five seasons I think managed to run. Their Halloween episodes were utterly disconnected from all other continuity, and so they would die in the Halloween episodes. There's one where they all have their heads switched by a mad scientist in the building, and like they end the episode with like, "Well, crap, I guess I'm going to your job tomorrow." and they just wrap it up like. And so I loved that show just because you could tell their writers hit the Halloween episode and were like, let's go kill everybody on the set, like do whatever.
That's just not streaming anywhere or anything, is it?
I seriously doubt it.
Is it any? Is it possible it holds up? Because it sounds. I remember really liking it.
I have actually. I watch a lot of television.
Yep,
as we all do.
The move Les did was just so cute.
Listeners
are really missing out not being able to view this.
I've rewatched all of that show. I watched it all once when it aired, and I have rewatched all of Two Guys a Girl. And I feel like it holds up, but yeah. it is just a sitcom. Like it's not got.
Yeah,
I can't say it's got some historical.
Suzanne Cryer was, I believe, Ryan Reynolds' girlfriend for a while, and I have a huge crush on her, and she's great in Silicon Valley. So yeah, I have a weird fondness for that show, and I don't remember the Halloween episodes, but now I kind of want to watch them. I also Community had fantastic. Halloween
episodes.
Oh yeah,
that's like top of the list for me.
And you know what else? And because there was one this week, Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Those Halloween heist episodes are killer every time.
Huh. I need to check those out.
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah.
All right. Benjamin Hamill says, I recently finished a French show called Braquois, meaning violent heist. This show is basically the French version of The Shield. It was really good. What are your favorite foreign TV shows? Well, I want to watch that.
Yeah.
I love The Returned, Le Revenant.
Hmm.
You guys seen this?
No.
It's a zombie show in the same way that something like it's about people coming back to life, but it's not a zombie apocalypse thing, but it definitely plays with the tropes.
Just people come back.
Yeah, and it's really good. It's really moody and effective, and it's got a girl who I think she maybe was murdered, but they don't know what happened. There's a little girl who gets run off the road by like a bus.
Dang.
And it's like it's this little French town in the middle of nowhere, so like there's not a lot of like it's very isolating. And I haven't watched the second season. I love the first season. I still haven't gotten around to it, but it is worth watching, and it's on Netflix. And I will definitely point you toward that one.
I'm trying to think of foreign shows I watch that aren't British, because that's
There's a lot of British. There's a lot of British TV.
Yeah, I mean that counts the way Canadian shows count.
There's the one that's Gillian Anderson is in The Fall. Have you guys seen any of that? I found that a little slow, but it's definitely gorgeous.
The original Broadchurch.
Yeah.
That was good.
Wallander technically counts as a foreign show. I think it's Swedish.
Oh, you know, okay.
Lillehammer.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's a lot of fun.
Which introduced me to... Oh, Norseman.
Oh, yeah, Norseman.
Oh, there you go.
I was about to say, Lillehammer, why do I know... Oh, yes, that's right, because the lead guy that's so sad in Norseman, I can't think of his character's name, but yeah, he's from Lillehammer.
All right, final question. Dennis McElwain says, with Gotham doing Solomon Grundy... What outlandish supervillain do you want any of the networks or streaming services to tackle next? Working on an edit of my iTunes review, you should be afraid. Very afraid. Imagine Vincent Price laugh. Kyle, you got any obscure villains?
I really like that story where Supergirl fights that clone of herself. Wait, have they already done that on the show? The Black Kryptonite clone?
You know, I don't think they have, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all right.
Some Supergirl. But what would be really cool is if they, instead of doing like they did in the comics, just cast somebody who looks like her and have a Doctor Who Master type thing going on.
Yeah. I would like to see Etrigan the Demon. I think that'd be super awesome, especially on Legends of DC Universe. Although I could see them weirdly putting it in a like Arrow or something like that, too.
Continuing with our discussion from the other week, I would still love to see Animal Man and the Green, the Red, and the Rot be a season-long problem on all of the DC shows.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
It just guest star Animal Man in there somewhere and let the Rot be the big bad for the season.
I would also, and I don't know how obscure this is.
It's not a speedster, though, so they won't do it.
It is outlandish. I would love them to do Despero for Supergirl.
Ooh, yeah.
Like, do him right. Make him scary. Make him a big, you know, telepathic three-eyed badass monster. I would love to see that.
I was just thinking, is it Kimo that the metal men fight?
Oh, yeah.
I think they'd have fun making like a big glass, goofy...
Oh, yeah.
Chemical-filled vat of a monster. Ooh,
Kite
Man. Fans. Hell yeah.
Kite Man. Where do you want Kite Man to appear?
Actually, through the Berlantiverse.
It's a crossover?
Yes. And like with no explanation, nobody catch him. He should just go by in the background, yell the catchphrase, and Supergirl go, what the heck was... We'll be right back.
got some news for the week. FX has, you know, FX does all these anthology shows.
Yes.
Ryan Murphy is doing like I think six of them. So they have one called Pose, which is set in the 1980s, tackles several societal segments in New York during the era, including the rise of luxury style living, the downtown more hipster vibe of the city. And it's interesting because it will feature five transgender actors in recurring roles, which is the largest number of any show.
Wow.
That's very progressive. That's cool.
Yeah.
I'm curious about what an 80s period piece drama is going to look like as an anthology.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested. I've really enjoyed the rise of anthology shows.
Yeah.
I know everything's going to hit a played out moment. I mean, everything can get oversaturated, but I've kind of enjoyed watching like troops of actors come back and do these things each season. I think that's a neat.
Yeah.
I love that in movies. I follow these auteur directors that have their people that just like working with them, like Paul Thomas Anderson.
Wes Anderson.
The Andersons, generally.
And Paul Thomas Anderson.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. From Mortal Kombat fame.
Yes. Yes. and all of the Mila Jovovich.
Yes.
Resident Evil movies.
Yes. Is that Paul Thomas or is that PT? I can't remember which. Okay, he's PT.
I don't know.
Paul Thomas Anderson is the auteur. P.T. Anderson is the opposite of that.
One of them. Yes.
P.T. Barnum was
and P.
the...
And P.T. Barnum set aside like, for a minute.
I always felt like Deadwood had that going. Like, there's a set of actors who can say this crap without tripping over their lines.
Yeah.
And then they all ended up in John from Cincinnati, and they've all ended up... Like, they just kind of follow these writers.
So here's some news I could have written yesterday or tomorrow or the day after that. Ghostbusters' Dan Aykroyd wants a live-action Netflix series.
I'm sure we do. I mean,
this is not news.
Is that Skull Vodka not selling like you thought it would?
Skull Bottle Vodka purveyor, alien believer, and actor Dan Aykroyd.
I'm really amazed that Dan Aykroyd he probably has pitched this multiple times.
Oh, sure.
If you woke him up right now, he'd probably pitch this.
If you want him on the street, he will pitch this to you.
Because you know he would kill to have a Mythbusters-style show that just went into like the legit tech involved in Ghostbusters. Because didn't he like ridiculously figure out all of the Ghostbusters crap? Like, there's reasons why you don't look in the trap.
Uh-huh.
And, like, there's reasons behind the proton packs. And, like, Aykroyd nerded all this stuff out to a, like, put you to sleep in the theater level. Like, I love Ghostbusters, and apparently I should be thrilled that Dan Aykroyd had an editor.
You know who I think did Ghostbusters better, which I don't hate the new Ghostbusters film.
No, it's great.
But, and we can get into this more later, but I feel like Mindhunter was more of a Ghostbusters movie in the sense that when they start out, nobody in their institution kind of believes them and thinks it's all. And then the recorder, which we'll talk more about the recorder.
Yeah.
But that felt like a proton pack. Like they were going in to like kind of get this like information, almost like busting ghosts.
There are a lot of things in this world that I do not expect. You comparing Mindhunter to Ghostbusters is very high on that
list.
Yep, I
didn't see that.
And the fact that it works. I tip my hat.
Do you see what I'm saying,
though? Yes, I 100% see what you're
saying. Because Ghostbusters for me was always first, like a guy's down and out. We got to start our own business now. We've kind of lost our jobs.
How long until we get a slow burn Netflix season ghost story show like The Conjuring, where they very slowly, like, there's a movie called Ghost Story where they bring in and they try to record.
Yeah, Ghostwatch.
Yeah. Like, how long until they do a slow burn trying to, and like, where the season finale and like the end of the eighth episode is a noise on a mic and that's it.
So apparently Aykroyd's idea is to depict high school versions of the Ghostbusters characters.
What?
Yep.
After school jobs.
Please don't do this.
No, do not do this. I mean, here's the thing. We don't have to say anyone not to do this.
This will not happen.
No one at Netflix is going to Dan Aykroyd saying, "You got any ideas for us?" No one is doing that.
Dan, listen up. Here's what you do, buddy. You got to bring back Ghostbusters the cartoon. We want more of that shit.
Yeah, man. Where's Tracy the gorilla? Like, I want some.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. No, that's Filmation Ghostbusters. We're talking about the real Ghostbusters.
The real Ghostbusters.
Oh, wait. There's a different. No, I'm kidding. We're not getting to that.
John Carpenter is coming out of semi-retirement to helm the pilot episode of an anthology series called Tales for a Halloween Night.
In fairness, John Carpenter is taking a break from touring with his son's band, playing all of his theme music live.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, I saw that here. That was awesome.
Oh, that's
But yeah, that's what John Carpenter's been up to the last couple of years.
That's what I want to do when I retire. Tour with John Carpenter's son's band.
Yeah. They look like they're having a blast on stage. He looks like a madman.
So he and his producing partner and wife are taking the reins on Tales for Halloween Night pilot, which is going to be a sci-fi show, a horror anthology. I'm interested. I mean, Carpenter hasn't made a good movie in a long, long time. But, you know, he did. He directed two episodes of the anthology series Masters of Horror, which I guess got good reviews. I would love to see him return to form.
Yeah. I mean, Vampires is not a good movie, no. But I enjoyed it.
Yes.
Ghosts of Mars is not a good movie, and I didn't enjoy it. But he's John Carpenter. Like, I'll give him a crack at it. Yeah. He is also, I believe, redoing – I think they brought him in to redo the score for the they're doing another reboot of Halloween. Which I thought that was kind of a cool nod. Like, they're going to use the score, but, like, bring him in to punch it up and do it with a new
– Add some kazoos.
Yeah.
They need to do another Halloween, too.
there's been some synth advancement.
Magnum PI, we've talked about the reboot, the series in development at CBS. What I think is interesting about this is it's a Screen Rant article, and I always like to make fun of Screen Rant. They're wildly optimistic about this. They're talking about how the fully updated version will be Thomas Magnum will be a decorated ex-Navy SEAL who tries to use his military skills to carve out a new career as a private investigator. A similar supporting cast will, as he gets help from his fellow vets, Theodore T.C. Calvin and Orville Rick Wright. The rebooted version of his Hillerman character is said to be former MI6 agent Juliet Higgins. So I don't know if that's going to be the daughter, if there's going to full-on reboot. And the show will explore Magnum taking on difficult cases for people who have no one else to turn to, as well as reportedly exploring some social issues regarding the difficulties ex-servicemen have in acclimating back to life in the private sector. This all sounds fine, but
doesn't sound a little like nothing. Ted Cruz propaganda?
Nothing about this sounds like.
So Screen Rant says the pilot is being written by Peter Lenkov, who is also the showrunner for the Hawaii Five-O and MacGyver reboots. And I'm like, none of that is good.
No.
Hawaii Five-O is completely forgettable, and MacGyver was actively bad.
Hawaii Five-O is still running, but it's only because no one's noticed that show.
Yeah.
Like, it's just still on.
Yeah. It's like when your TV's on in the background, Hawaii Five-O is probably on it.
Yeah, the best news I heard about this is that Magnum PI is on CBS, and that feels oddly fitting.
Yeah, that fits. Yeah,
because like Hawaiian print shirts and like retired burnouts fit. I could just see this. My problem is that there is absolutely no way that they cast a Magnum PI who is a burnout or a fuck up at all.
Yeah,
this is going to be a good looking buff dude.
Yeah,
not that Tom Selleck's not a good looking dude. But he looked rough. Like, that was some Rockford Files. Like, you woke up Magnum in the back of a stolen car. I mean.
Yeah.
And I don't think this is going to be that guy. Like,
you know how you could have done it? Do it as a period piece.
Yeah, for sure.
And, like, have the stashes and everything.
You know who could do it? You make Tim Oliphant Magnum.
Oh, he could pull off. Yeah.
And I'll watch this.
Yeah, for sure.
Huh.
Yeah.
Or even watch you make stupid after-school special episodes about problems of servicemen. But put Tim Oliphant in it.
Or if this was on FX.
Yes, yes.
But it's on CBS. It's not going to be good. And it's going to go for 20 seasons.
Yeah, it's that they want to take a swing at social issues, and they are not on the network for that. They are definitely on the network for kind of fuck-up CAD.
Yeah,
In someone else's rich house, solving crimes for the fun of it.
Don't know if you guys saw this news, but Star Trek Discovery has been officially renewed for season 2.
I'm happy about this.
I am very happy
about
this.
Saw that coming.
Where are you guys on? Are you caught up?
Yeah.
Ooh, I am one behind.
Are we five in or four in?
I don't know. I think five.
I think I'm all the way
caught
up. Wild
week. I've not watched this past Sundays.
I am loving this show. I'm so happy it's getting a second season.
I had real issues with it at the end of episode 3. My minor issues with it going in of like, oh, this is a dark Trek show, turned into like, guys, I'm concerned that we're making like the opposite of what I wanted, and I kept getting reassured and kept getting anyway, episode 4 went a long way for that, so I am thrilled that this is getting renewed. Like, I no longer feel like they are, like we talked about, I enjoyed Homeland, but I was kind of wanting it off the air because I felt like it was making the conversation worse. Uh-huh. I was a little worried for a minute that, like, are you going to take the best utopia example I've ever had on television and use it to teach us why we should all suck it up and go to war? Fuck you.
Yeah. But they're definitely doing more than that.
They have taken some steps to fix that.
My biggest worry is we don't know, like Brian Fuller was heavily involved in the development of the show, and you can see that in the show. And I don't know that he's going to be back for season 2. So I hope they don't fuck it up, because now I really love it. And
yeah,
I'll be
I want
more
to say his last step in involvement was they have my number.
Yeah, I think that's right.
They can call me if they have questions.
So I'm a little nervous about that, because I don't want if Star Trek Discovery had come on and been bad, it would have been, okay, well, that's a bummer. There's no good Star Trek. But now if season two does not live up to it, I mean, oh, they fucked up the show that I love.
Here's the only thing that could screw it up for me. Too much Klingon. All right? They're kind of going full Klingon, if you know what I mean. I like that TNG Klingon. That's
you
like
never
the
go
perfect
full Klingon, Kyle.
You never go full
never
Klingon.
Never go full Klingon.
We don't got goatees anymore. No. Like, oh, dude.
That's true. These Klingons are not growing facial hair.
It's true.
I'm saying. I mean, they probably are, you know, smooth seals all over.
No, can't unsee.
Speaking of things that I was not expecting to hear today, there was the there was Kyle's crazy Mindhunter Ghostbusters comparison.
Still
talking
fans.
about smooth skin, smooth Klingons. Not expecting that either.
You guys literally don't get taken out of that show every time those Klingons come on the screen.
No,
while
I'm
they're
them.
All Dothra, rah, like,
no.
Oh, I bet he doesn't have any pubic hair.
I do always spend a couple of seconds thinking, can they not cut the latex into three pieces and glue it into better articulation on their faces? Because the bottom parts of the Klingon faces sometimes, they don't quite fold like a bad Halloween mask, but they are cumbersome to them speaking. In a way that whoever Doug Jones is, or whatever.
Saru.
Saru. I think he really is Saru, and Doug Jones is a character I've seen him play. Because that guy is an alien.
Yeah, I think that's actually accurate. That
he
makes a lot of sense.
Wholly unencumbered by his makeup. It's amazing.
We've never seen Doug Jones in out of any kind of makeup. I think if he is actually an alien, that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, they just put a suit on him.
Yeah. Finally, because Grant's not here and we're going rogue, he did not put this on the news rundown, but Les and I want to talk about it.
Going rogue.
Kristen Bell says a Veronica Mars series will happen eventually. She was basically Ryan Hansen, her co-star, does a Facebook Live video, and somebody asked about Veronica Mars revival, and he just called up Kristen Bell, who then said she's in constant contact with series creator Rob Thomas, willingness, commitment to do it again. Currently, she's on The Good Place, wouldn't be able to dedicate the time to another TV show, but they could do like a miniseries.
And you said who made this video?
That would be Ryan Hansen.
So Team Dick?
Team Dick. TV Dicks.
TV Dicks episode.
So – yeah, this means nothing. Of course, Kristen Bell's going to say that yeah, we'll do a miniseries.
It warms my heart at any time I find out that, yes, I understand that it was true 15 minutes ago, and I always want to know again,
yeah,
that the whole crew from Veronica Mars wants to come back and do this, yep, every time. I don't know why that always warms my heart.
Same. Nothing needs to come of it. I'm happy to know it's out there.
I love everyone involved in that show. I love that show.
But I would really like to have a miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
I kickstarted the movie.
I had people that told me, like, this is kind of the stuff that Kickstarter's not for. You shouldn't have to Kickstarter stuff from rich people. I don't give a shit. I will Kickstarter it. I'll Kickstarter it again.
Yep. Yeah. Hell yeah. I got a t-shirt. I got stickers, which are still on my laptop. I got I don't remember what all there was there. Oh, I got the script. And I got to see the movie early, and I've got a digital copy of the movie.
You funded the crap out of it. Like, I just went to the movie. I got a digital copy of the movie.
I think I won like the $100.
I'm watching that.
The deluxe.
I loved that movie. I know it was not everybody loved it, but I was super into that movie.
Show introduced me to Kristen Ritter.
Yeah. And also, I have both novels. I am a Veronica Mars super fan. Gents, let's talk about TV Dicks.
Who are you going to call? Mindhunters.
So we're going to start off talking about Mindhunter from Netflix, which is this is David Finch's new show. Even though
afraid of no minds,
he is not listed as the creator. The creator is somebody else.
That. Well, in the same way that I actually had a moment where I felt like a bad TV nerd finding out that David Fincher did not create House of Cards.
No, he was just one of the consulting producers.
He was just one of the consulting producers, yeah. And Bo Willimon has some more credit for that, for the American version of it. So the other name that I didn't know that isn't directing this episode, I figured that guy is the one to watch when this show is done.
The IMDb, which is never a super reliable source, but they said that they listed Joe Penhall as the creator, who is most well known for writing and, I believe, directing. No, he wrote The Road. The screenplay for The Road.
Ew.
Oh, that like super dark,
super
dystopian
dark
movie.
Yeah, based on
this is lighthearted.
Yeah, it's like a family comedy.
But Fincher did direct like four episodes. And this show stars Jonathan Groff, who you might know as the general or King George from Hamilton.
No. Oh.
And Holt McElhaney from Lights Out, a show that nobody knows but me and Les, but we loved.
Man. I'm so I want this show to make him blow up. Holt McElhaney.
He's so
a
great.
Really good actor.
So what do we so great? You got through what, two episodes last?
I've only seen two episodes of it. I'm loving it. The crit I keep hearing is that it's slow. And maybe something changes after these two, but it seems like for me that crit is coming from it not having a big bad.
Yeah.
Bureaucratic inertia is the big bad.
Yeah.
Like no one believing them that this shit works or that there's any value to interviewing Kemper. Like, and I get that's a frustrating. That's they aren't hunting down Ed Kemper. They're just interviewing
him. He's already been caught.
Yeah, they're just interviewing him, trying to convince other schmuck cops to listen to him. And the cops are making occasionally fair points of like, oh, so when I caught Manson, I missed his bad childhood?
Yeah.
So this, my bad.
Mindhunter is set in the late 70s. It is two FBI agents who are expanding criminal science by delving the psychology of murder and getting close to monsters. Basically, it is the development of the behavioral science.
It is literally the first time that a law enforcement officer has gone to an academic department and said, hey, so you guys study psychology too?
And they said, what are you, a cop?
Well, and then the cops said stuff worse. Like, this is far enough back. You're 5 years out from Hoover dying.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that nobody knows that Hoover was wearing dresses because the bureau is still very much good old boys system where they look at him and like, you can go talk to the behavioral psych guys, but I mean, you can go talk to academics, but that's for backroom boys.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's one point where he says, I've been here so long, when I started, it was no skirts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kyle, how much did you watch all this?
Oh, I watched all the way to the end.
Me too. I burned this whole thing in like 2 days. I fucking love this show.
I have actually watched this twice.
Wow.
I marathoned it, and then Shannon wanted to see it, and we just shot through it a second time.
I'm sure I'll end up watching it again, because I immediately messaged Lisa. It was like, you're going to have to watch this. This is amazing. You're going to love this.
So I thought – Holt McElhaney stole the show for me. He is the older Bill Tench. He's the older FBI agent who sort of becomes the partner of the younger Holden Ford. And he's the skeptic throughout a lot of this. He's the, what are we doing? Why are you talking to these guys? And he's sort of the tough guy. And I love that goes – and as it goes on, Les, you'll find that we start to see in his life. We start to see his kid and his wife and a little bit of that. Mm-hmm. And that was really interesting to me.
Even in the couple episodes I've seen, you can see how protective his character is of his family.
Yeah.
The first time that Holden shows up at his house in the car and how did you find out where I live?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, well, and you know you're going to learn a little bit more about that. One of my favorite lines from the show is Holden asks him – they had just made a breakthrough where they're discovering that your childhood plays a lot into whether you become a serial killer.
Right.
And he asks him, oh, so did you talk to your dad a lot? And he goes, no. Then he goes, oh, so but you talked to your son a bunch, right? And he just goes quiet, doesn't say anything.
Yeah.
We cut to the next scene.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. The opening credits, like the show feels classy from start to finish, every molecule of it.
Yeah.
The recording device, like the conversation kind of feeling all the loving shots of the recording device, but it's going over it the same way you go over the cadaver, and then they intercut with these little slam shots of bodies.
Right.
It's unsettling and cold.
Yeah.
Creepy Fincher stuff.
Well, it made me think, all right, this is Seven David Fincher.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
But it's really Zodiac David Fincher.
Yeah.
I found watching this episode by episode, I started to think about the Black Mirror to Doctor Who scale of season-long continuity.
Yeah.
All right? Doctor
Who. Fear. Love.
Well, I feel like Doctor Who, it's like every episode, it's like, you remember that, you know, fart he did in the first episode? Well, that's coming back. That means something. Whereas like Black Mirror or Twilight Zone, just episode by episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I felt like each episode in this worked so well on its own, kind of focusing on a different scenario or a different killer.
Uh-huh.
Maybe the first two a little slow, like that criticism you were saying earlier, I totally get that. Because once you get into it, you're into it.
It just feels methodical to me. I think if people are expecting them to be hunting Buffalo Bill for the whole season, then I can see where this would be weird, because it doesn't arc towards, like, it doesn't ramp through a chase.
Right.
Well, what's interesting and what I think is both a strength and a place where it can improve more is it takes this interesting concept that they played with in Mad Men where it's like, no, the societal norm is totally alien to what we know. Right.
Yeah.
And now these guys are going to venture into something more familiar. Like, we've all seen Dexter, you know, this is child's play to us. But for these guys, you know, bringing up a story about masturbation is like, what?
Yeah. The list of words that they had to memorize of deviant words.
Yeah.
Watching the feds have these conversations about how when I started this job, if somebody was stabbed 50 times, you went and looked for their business partner or their jilted lover.
Yeah.
Or their, you know, spouse or whatever, and you understood the motive. And these guys keep running up against not motiveless, but they don't understand.
Yeah.
They're basically starting to wastebasket term everything into motiveless.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And there's finally a couple of people going, hey, so can this large a portion of crime just be crazy?
Yeah.
Like, it, you know, is there, as you put it, like, you know, even if it is crazy, we're having to fight it, so we need to understand crazy. Crazy isn't just random. Crazy does still have a...
Right.
Now, later in the show, the first time we see them actually make a breakthrough where they apply some of the knowledge they learned in a very useful way, it is like, as the show says, it's like a Sherlock Holmes moment. Like, you really are like, oh, wow, I see how this works.
Yeah, and the other thing I like about this is gruesome subject material, but there is no point at which I felt like I was being dragged through something. It is somewhat light in its approach because it's so character driven. Mm-hmm. Like, you are so invited into the life of Holden and his girlfriend and his partnership with Bill. And then they bring in that psychologist by Anna Torv.
Oh yeah.
And it's all about sort of their relationships and their relationship with their job and all that kind of thing. So that when you see the serial killer moments where they get these creepy moments where like these small town cops are having to deal with these horrific murders, it's still all about how these feds interact with this local cop who's doing his best job, but is horrified by what he's seeing. And I think that is what makes it sort of approachable. It is all about how people deal with this unreal stuff.
This is a little bit classier and more ongoing show about a larger subject. But if people are wanting the same kind of birth of a science, hunt someone down chase, I right before watching Mindhunter, I happened to also watch the Unabomber miniseries, which I think is confusingly called Manhunt.
Yeah,
And it is Sam Worthington as bland person, and and then Paul Bettany is the Unabomber.
I've heard that's great.
It's great, but he runs into the same thing. The Unabomber's case was the first to use forensic linguistics. They invented that science. For that case.
Yeah.
It was the first time that somebody argued that even though I can't prove it was the same typewriter, in fact, they're different typewriters, I can tell from some bizarre tiny turn of phrase that it is the same mind that wrote this, that wrote that.
Yeah.
And they used that to get the warrant. And no one had ever used that in court before. And so watching Mindhunter and watching them butt their heads against cops going, nah, that's BS.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's a similar thing of in the Unabomber one of watching him go, no, I'm telling you, this guy's letters that we got from this family is the guy that wrote that. And people going, what, just because he says, you know, eat your cake and have it too?
Yeah. That's when I finished watching Manhunter turned up on recommendations.
It's worth watching. I mean, I feel like Netflix is just, you're going to feel like Netflix is just handing it to you because they're so similar. But, and it's more of a straightforward chase. I feel like Mindhunter has a larger thing it's trying to do as a show.
Right. Yeah. Well, I really like, and we didn't even talk about like the guy playing Ed Kemper. He's such a great, effective, like,
they find that guy.
Because he's talking about horrible things, but he talks about it in such a conversational way. You're like, I kind of like this guy. He seems like a good guy to hang out with.
Is the detail too much? I don't have to go into all the detail for you.
Yeah. And they do that with a couple different guys. And they talk to several different serial killers. And every time they talk to one of them, and by the way, they coined the phrase serial killer in this show.
Right now he's still calling them sequential killers.
Yeah.
Sequence killers.
And when they talk to the serial killer guys, they're always very different, but they're always sort of charming and interesting, and you can sort of see the weird sociopathic draw they all have. It's really good.
When all the cops, before they meet Kemper, are talking about how likable and how much he worked with them and how he drank at their bar and how when he turned himself in, I drove him back and he talked to me the whole friggin' time and I had to tell him to shut up.
Yeah.
Like,
I think amazing. He goes, do you think he'll talk to us? And the guy kind of laughs like, yeah, try getting him to stop.
Yeah, I hope you do.
Something I love about the character development of everybody on this show is they don't focus on the good qualities of anyone.
No.
There's no hero. In fact, just listening to us talk about Kemper and some of the other serial killers, they're the interesting ones. Yeah. Like, you know, when we look at Holden, he's always kind of played as like the square when he's around his girlfriend.
But he's also super arrogant.
Yeah, very arrogant, very reckless, doesn't really respect authority or the people who have been like put in charge of him.
Yeah.
His courting of his girl is outright petulant and rude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love that relationship, by the way. I think they're fantastic. They have great chemistry.
She is a Karen Allen thing going that's killing me.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Huh. But I was going through. The only person I couldn't really see them focus like that was Dr. Carr. I felt like every time they put her on there, it's like she's swooning over her.
She's the moral center.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's always in the right. The closest you get is when you see her with her partner and you see that she's sort of not a great romantic partner, that she sort of throws away a relationship in order to pursue her career.
I mean, it's still not like furnitureless, reading books and your mattress on the floor, true detective level.
Right.
Like, these people aren't utterly broken by their jobs.
Right.
But I do think they are, at least from what I've seen so far, painting a nice dichotomy between – stuff Holden says to Lake Kemper of, I'm having a hard time squaring you with what I know you did to be here. And at the same time, like, these put-together, square, upstanding, normal people, and the more you see behind the curtain, you should also have a hard time squaring the bullshit they say versus how they really are.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the show's not front and center with it, but taking a pot shot at or peeling back on the 50s skin of it, of like, did crime go crazy or did our facade finally break? Of like, you can't quit lying and saying that society is normal.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've started listening to this podcast, Criminal, on the Spotify. It's just a Spotify podcast. And when they talk about old crimes, you're like, dang, you would have never thought something so violent would have happened in the 1950s.
Right.
I think the show's great. I think everybody's going to like, I was looking at the Rotten Tomatoes score. It's like, it's up there at like 98 or something. Here's what I think they need to do. They need to take some money and they need to step this up and do the Mad Men level detail on the period piece.
Yeah.
Because there were a few times, I'm thinking of a grocery store scene where they literally touched everything in the grocery store. So obviously I could see that most of the packaging was modern packaging. Or the police lamp they have at the FBI headquarters and also in every single police like precinct that they visited across the country.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because that's the thing, you know, they're supposed to be depicting different regions of the country,
mm-hmm.
yet all the police stations kind of look the exact same.
It blends it makes it a little difficult. Yeah, because I've started, well, each episode, yeah, they're going to a different location, but it all kind of feels like they're showing up to the same place.
Yeah, no, I think that this show definitely, you know, people are going to be ready for more, and it's going to be a huge hit. If Making a Murderer is a hit for Netflix, this is going to be even bigger.
Yeah.
So put the money into it.
So whoever's like, finding lamps for Stranger Things, if you guys could get on this.
All right, let's move over to Hulu and talk about Chance Season 2.
Yes, I really enjoyed Chance Season 1.
Me too. And I
– Same.
I didn't at first. When I watched the first episode, I quit about 20 minutes in. I was like, that's not for me. And then I went back and watched the whole thing and fell completely in love with it.
I feel like it's a little bit subversive and there's almost a pull a fast one on you from what Chance Season 1 did for me. I went into it going, oh, great, Hugh Laurie's a doctor on TV again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I love Hugh Laurie, so I'll why not like Dr. Procedurals more or less?
Sure.
So I'll watch a couple episodes of it. And it wasn't that. And so at first I was really frustrated of like, get to the doctor show that I'm supposed to be watching with Hugh Laurie. And then I realized, oh, this is just a Sam Spade show.
It's pure noir.
This is a straight-up noir detective show.
Yeah.
Set modern, only his day job is neuropsychologist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the first season was all about sort of his broken love affair with this woman who we didn't know. She had a split personality. Her husband was an abusive cop. Like,
yeah.
Wow. And that
stuff
is... You
start to find out that she's got problems, and yeah. you start to find out that Chance has problems.
Yeah.
That was when I was like, whoa, where's this show going?
Yeah.
Are we going to find out that, you know, he's actually not a doctor, or he's way yeah. crazier than he yeah, lets himself believe?
And they didn't go there, but what they... Where they landed at the end of season one
yeah.
Really left the pieces for a really wonderful show, I feel like.
Well, and I wasn't sure what season two was going to look like.
Yeah.
Because so much of the arc was pretty much resolved. I mean, yeah, there's definitely stuff
yeah,
to go
like,
forward
all
with.
All the Blackstone stuff.
But yeah, it was all wrapped. And so they come back and they focused in, I think, on what that kind of encounter does to someone like Chance, who's now like taking risks and like is a sort of seeking out danger.
Yes.
And seeking out conflict.
It's a little reckless.
So Randy yeah. and I talked about this a little bit before, that this show, I wanted to message you as soon as I finished watching the first episode, because it reminded me of Terriers.
Yeah.
In a darker
yeah.
tone.
Yeah.
But you've got kind of a down and out, you know, smart, good detective like Chance. Like, and I mean, mm-hmm. Chance is still doing his day job, but kind of the down and out Donald Logue character, and then you've got his criminal partner.
Yeah.
Only this is a darker show, so he's not trying to get, instead of just having Britt occasionally lift a wallet, he's encouraging Dee to go out and beat the hell out of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like and then trying to like half encourage him to not permanently paralyze him, and then Dee right. constantly calling him on Doc for a man who says he doesn't want to make victims. You sure like it.
Did any of you think while watching Mindhunter, like, oh, if Dee wasn't doing Chance, he would make a great character for
yeah.
like them to interview?
And I want Ethan Suplee in a lot of stuff now. That guy is so good.
Ethan Suplee is my favorite part of the show. He's got to play Dee, because Dee's a sociopath in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But he's also like one of the most human characters.
Like, he's like, your sociopath.
He knows full
yeah, well. He's our sociopath.
He knows full well what he's doing.
Yeah.
And he was willing to ask the questions about, like, well, do you want me to do this? Because once you tell me to do it, I will do it. Like, I don't feel anything about
weirdly,
it.
Weirdly, he's frequently not quite the moral center,
but in
he's
a way,
very often the one that brings people back where he'll go, is this stolen? I don't think we want to trade in stolen goods, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, oh, hey, so how's are we paralyzing that guy tonight? Like,
yeah.
The fuck?
Yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, when he gets into, I don't know if you've seen this part yet, Les, but there's a point where he gives advice to Chance's daughter. And that does not go well for anybody.
Oh, yeah.
No, I've seen him interact with her like once yeah. when he was oversalting his food.
Man, that was really good. Chance's daughter gets a lot more play in this season. I really like what they're doing with her, too.
I like that she has the same issues that Chance has, and yeah. that they're both kind of watching each other with this fear that they're permanently broken.
Yeah.
And that bond they share is great. This show, this season, I feel like it came back with him fully established as a Sam Spade detective. He mm-hmm. and Dee are full-time vigilantes. Yep. I mean, this is an ongoing thing mm-hmm. now, yeah. right? And it started me thinking, like, well, if the Blackstone thing's wrapped,
yep.
what happens to Sam Spade? Or, like, what happens to Jessica Jones or any of the detectives when they don't have a case? Like, well, they fall into a bottle.
Yeah.
And then when the next case comes around and a dame walks in or whatever, they've got to, like, pull them out of the bottom of alcoholism
yeah.
and get them back on their feet and make them do their brilliant thing and solve this case, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So at the end of the one I'd seen in this season, I think Chance's nemesis has kind of established himself by the end of the second or third episode.
Yeah, he's an interesting place.
And
yeah.
I can kind of see the new Blackstone they're going to butt up against, as well as the thing going on with the cop that sort of knows he lied about some of the events of last season. But instead of the bottom of a bottle, Chance doesn't really drink.
Yeah.
What Chance does is go and get himself in, like, near-death experiences almost. Like let's just go pick a fight with, like, random guys that are head taller than me. He almost picks a fight over someone else's car wreck.
Yeah.
And his daughter's like, what if he'd had a tire iron and gone to his car? You'd just be done. You yeah. know this. You see these people in your office all the time. So instead of alcoholism, Chance has this addiction to danger and almost beating himself. Dee calls him out on it of yeah. like, man, I've had guys go with me on collections that can't be there because if things go smoothly, they still have to make it a bad fight. Mm-hmm. You're not in control. And I kind of loved realizing that, like, Chance's addiction is that danger, that brokenness. This makes him skirt close to his obsession issues. And that he needs a case
yeah.
to rein him into, like, a reasonable level of vigilante so that he doesn't, you know, like, if like finding out that if Batman got bored too long, he would get guns and go bug shit nuts. You've got to pull him back into a detective level. Yeah.
I also like they expanded on the other characters this season, and you'll see more of this go along. But the guy who was the detective who was like, I think it was Paul Blackstone's partner, maybe, or just like he knew him well. But
he just knew too much about him. Yeah.
So he comes in here, and there's a scene in, I think, episode 3 where he and Dee are sort of machoing out at each other in the car, and it's amazing. And there's this bit where Chance basically pulls off the road, and he's like, all right, enough. And they get out of the car, and they're and the detective's like, all right, guns on the hood. And he puts his gun down. He puts his like backup piece down. And then Dee does a, you know – yeah, the Mel Gibson in
Unload Beyond a Million Thunderdome, Weapons.
Just unloads a bunch of weapons, and eventually the detective is just kind of like watching this, and they come to sort of and they come to a point where they sort of have an agreement amongst each other. But the chemistry between the two of them is great, and bringing him in is great. And then there's also Clark Peters' character, the sort of erudite furniture salesman who hooked Chance up with Dee in the first place.
I love him.
They give him a little more to do this season. They give him a subplot, and I always like to see that guy get more work.
Yeah.
And at the same time, there's this whole through line that you talk about, this sort of sociopathic good guy tech guy who clearly has hides an agenda, hides more of a darker past. And it feels less focused in ways than the first season did, but in a good way. Like, I really like that they built this world, they built this foundation, and now they expand upon it.
Yeah.
I have to disagree.
Yeah.
Wah, 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 wah. No. The first season, I feel like that main through story really pulled me episode to episode. Like,
okay.
I had some cliffhangers where I was like, oh, I got to catch the next one.
Uh-huh.
And where I felt like the end of the first episode didn't really have me hooked. End of the second, I was more hooked in. But I don't know if this through story this season is going to affect me the same way.
Huh, interesting.
In which case, maybe it's not a bad thing, but it's definitely going to make me reevaluate what I'm trying to get out of this show.
While I find his nemesis character really interesting, mm-hmm. when I saw the last episode, I saw he seems to really establish him as the villain or the big bad at the end shot, and I kind of felt like, oh, I don't really want you to be the big villain. I'm fine with you being a side plot or a subplot, but I didn't necessarily want him to. But I'm willing to. I liked all of season one enough, and I've liked what else has happened in season two that I'm willing to see what they transform that character into.
Yeah.
But he's going to need to wear something else besides whatever tracksuit he has in that scene.
The thing I'm really liking is it's providing a spoke for them to turn wheels and other stuff. So they put Dee in touch with another character in a way that we haven't seen that character interact with somebody. They put Clark Peters' character in a situation that he wouldn't have been in. They bring in that detective in a way that they wouldn't have had to bring him in. And all of that lets these other characters have storylines. And so I've been completely hooked. Like, the only reason I didn't watch season 5 or episode 5 was because I watched 4 episodes and I just was too tired. But I'm all in. I think this is a really good show. All right, finally, let's talk Comrade Detective on Amazon. This is a 6 episode show that they pretend is a Discovery from 80s Romania?
Romania. I don't care so much about the framing device. It's cute, and I'm glad they did it. Of Channing Tatum supposedly getting this care package basically from some Romanian actors saying, hey, we made this thing back in the day. Maybe you can do something with it now that the Cold War's over. And it is cute. Like, Channing Tatum like yells for his assistant, like, bring me a VCR and some vodka. Vodka with the VCR.
I totally thought that was real. Like, I feel like such a dipshit right now.
Yeah, I don't want to pick apart this facade. I was like,
so they didn't take old footage and remaster it?
That's the thing. All of these actors are Romanian. Mm-hmm. Like, there are two actors for every role. Because Channing Tatum does the voice of the main cop, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt is his partner.
Okay.
And Chloe Svenny is his partner's wife. Like, there's Nick Offerman is the chief. But not physically. So when I first sat down to watch this, I kind of thought it was going to be like Drunk History. And so I kept thinking, like, who are these B-list or C-list or D-list comedians that I'm just not recognizing their faces? But when I looked it up, they aren't anybody. Like, Florin is the most popular name in the cast, I think, because they're all Romanian. far as I know, and if all of this is a wonderful ruse, I'll punch you in the face for popping this for me. No one ruined this.
Here's the summary. It says, in the thick of 1980s Cold War hysteria, the Romanian government created the country's most popular and longest-running series, Comrade Detective, a sleek and gritty police show that not only entertained its citizens but also promoted communist ideals and inspired a deep nationalism. I think this is fake, guys. I'm sorry.
No. It's got to all be fake. It's so beautifully done, though. I think the guys doing it, the Romanian actors they have, are walking a wonderful line between like earnestly acting out an amazing 80s action film.
Yep.
While at the same time knowing that they're going to be overdubbed and that this is going to come across like a kung fu flick.
Yeah.
And then Channing Tatum and Joseph Gordon-Levitt do a wonderful job. Like all the overdubbed voice actors, they don't ham it too far for me.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because watching it, especially in that first episode where they have the opening title sequence, it felt like classic footage edited in a modern way. You know, like modern editing.
Sure.
Quick cuts. Like even the angles.
Yeah, because it's not paced this is like totally an 80s fake. Show. If you
this
go,
is totally.
Yeah, no, if you fake. Go watch Rockford Files, it is not at this pace.
Yeah.
Or mine. Yeah. But this made me... I don't know. I have many thoughts on the different levels this worked at for me.
No, I think I'm not as hyped for it as you guys were. I watched the first episode, and partly because, like I say, I burned through all of Mindhunter this week. I burned through a lot of Chance. I didn't have time to really sit down and rewatch this. So I watched the first episode, and I'm like, okay, I get the joke. They don't know what Jordache is. It's 80s movie tropes, you know, which I have a huge fondness for. It is basically like an 80s action movie made in Romania instead of the U.S.
What was it?
The American ambassador is the perfect like femme fatale, except instead of a you know Boris Natasha accent, she's got a Southern accent. Like I get the joke, but it didn't pull me in.
Yeah, I watched the first episode a couple of months ago. This has been on Amazon Prime for a few minutes. It's been on Amazon Prime for a few months, I think. And so I watched the first episode of it. Going, what the heck is this? and I did what you did, Randy. I watched it going, okay, I get the joke. Haha, okay.
Yeah.
This is funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it didn't go past that. I didn't see how this was going to sustain or what else it could say besides just this funny, let's flip the script. Like, it seemed like a Kids in the Hall, like it should be a really great sketch
on
a state or Kids in the Hall or something. But what started to happen with the show as I watched it surprised me. I had a Canadian friend of mine tell me that this is what all American TV looked like to her as a kid. that it just all looked as ludicrous, like the A-Team. Mm-hmm. If you aren't from the now I watch the show and watch it going, oh my God, this is communist tropes taken to a silly degree.
Yeah.
Exactly as silly as Miami Vice or A-Team or anything. Yeah. Like as far as our American idea of ourselves in American television in the 70s and 80s, this is as dumb on our idea of communists. And it works for reminding me of that. But the thing I didn't expect to happen is that it allows me to watch and enjoy just 80s action moviness.
Yeah.
In a way that I haven't in a long time. Now when I go back and watch 80s action movies, I rewatched Tango and Cash just like a month ago.
Yep, same.
I still love those movies. They're still trashy, wonderful. But I can't help but deconstruct them a little bit now. I can't help but watch them a little bit now and pick them apart and see those same tropes and see that silliness. Only I'm seeing it from like, oh, that's silly about me and about my... Watching it on Comrade Detective, I can just enjoy the 80s moviness of it somehow and the silliness. And I think it's because these aren't comedians doing the acting. Like, this is just an earnest movie of no names, as far as I'm concerned. And then every once in a while, I do get this, like, meta punchline joke of, I think it's in episode 3, they have to start, or they go interview a baker, and he explains transubstantiation, the Catholic belief that swallowing the Eucharist, it actually transforms into the body of Christ, like literally in your body as you swallow it.
Yeah.
Only because it's Romania and it's a communist state, and so there's no belief in, you know, no one's in shackled by belief in religion. It's just like, it's played like the Joe Friday satanic cult, like Dragnet level, like satanic cult 50s. And the minister is so creepy. And so this guy, the bread maker, who turns out to be like an underground minister, is handing out bread to the two cops and then explaining this to them. in like the creepiest, because if that was true, you would have just eaten a man's flesh. And both cops like spit the bread out, and like it's played so weird. they get off all these just ridiculously goofy pot shots at stuff by virtue of having taken that satire and then run it way, way further than that joke necessarily should have sustained. I don't know. There's a lot of choices made by not using comedians to do the acting and then making the weird little framing thing, doing the voice acting, but making it obviously dubbed. That all kind of keep like a House of Cards stacks up to a funnier satire parody thing than I expected. I've really got a lot out of Comrade Detective.
Huh. Kyle, what were your general thoughts?
It was too weird for me. Yeah. I'm not gonna lie. I'm listening to you less, and I'm not disagreeing with anything you're saying. It was entertaining.
Did you watch the whole thing?
I just watched the first episode.
Okay. So that's the thing. I kind of feel like I'm in the same place less was. Now I kind of – the way you sell it, I'm like, maybe I need to at least give a couple of more episodes.
You do have to push through and get sold on the plot that's happening. It's like there's a crossover moment of realizing like, oh, crap, they're serious about what's happening in this show.
Yeah.
Like this isn't – no ramifications. Like, you guys have an actual movie you're making here.
Yeah.
You just happen to also be doing this other satire thing on top of it. yeah. And so once it clicked of like, oh, okay, if I stop watching the joke for a minute, I can still enjoy shit blowing up.
Well, all right. That is three TV Dicks episodes.
We did not mention in news, and we're remiss for not mentioning that Robert Guillaume passed away this week.
That is actually true. Robert Guillaume passed away.
I don't know if anybody watched Sports Night. He was Isaac on Sports Night. He had his stroke during that show, and they wrote it into the show rather than cut him out.
I didn't know that. Yeah. I didn't know that was actually him.
No, he had that stroke he went home. He had dinner offset and had a stroke.
That's right. I remember hearing that. Now, that moment, there's a moment where he comes back.
Yes.
That is one of my favorite moment of all of Sports
Night. Yes. They wrote him back in with his speech impediment and stuff. They had to talk. I believe Sorkin had to talk Guillaume into doing it because he didn't want to embarrass himself.
Yeah.
And he said, no, it'll be an important role for you to play this.
Yeah.
Prior to that, he was in Stand By Me. There's a video that goes around the internet right now of him and Morgan Freeman. It's just an amazing scene. But he was Benson.
Yeah.
And he was on Soap.
Yeah. Notably, I mean, Benson is where everybody's – obituaries have mentioned Benson. And Benson's great, and Soap is great, but honestly, Sports Night is where I fell in love with Robert Guillaume.
Yeah, yeah. Benson's an incredibly important role because he was a black man on television that was smarter than every other character there.
Yeah.
And he literally – Benson goes from butler to lieutenant governor in the course of that show.
Yeah.
Which is pretty impressive. I mean, it was an impressive narrative run to have on any show at that period in time. I believe he also had a child die from AIDS.
No, wow.
But an amazing actor, I'm a giant Sports Night nerd, so he'll always be Isaac Jaffe.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for hearing us talk about TV Dicks.
Woohoo!
And thank you, Les. Thank you, Kyle.
Thank you, Randy.
And I guess Grant's going to be back in the next episode. So it's going to be a lot more growing up, a lot less dick talk.
Yeah, but next week when we return with less dick talk.
It'll be because Grant was here to lock it all down. But until that time...
TV Dudes out!
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast and a member of the Permanent Record Podcast Network. We are exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, please go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and Twitter @TV Dudes and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com and permanentrcrd.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.